And he never was bitter against them or throw them out. In fact, he gathered them to him. And I just don't understand people that say out of one corner of their mouth, well, Jesus did this and Jesus did that, and this is the man we're here to worship. And then there's a human being in their midst just like that, and they turn away. I know one thing that people have to get over is they have to quit hating black people. That's the first thing. Because you always see yourself as something you're not. You see yourself as better than other human beings. As long as you can hate black people, and as long as you can say, I'm better than they are, then there's somebody below you can kick. But once you get over that, you see and you begin to understand that you're not any better off than they are. In fact, you're worse off because you're believing a lie. And they never have. Black people haven't... Well, I'm not saying that they weren't beat down so bad that they didn't feel guilty and ashamed because they were black. But they weren't beat down so bad that they couldn't see that poor white people were as bad off as they were. And in that way, they're smarter than we are because we couldn't see that, and it was right in front of us. We'd be out in a cotton field chopping cotton, and we'd see the black people over in the next field. But never once did it occur to me that we had anything in common, because they were black and I was white, and that made it different.
You had that feeling of being superior then.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you did. Your husband did too?
Yes.
Then when did this other insight come to you? Any idea of when? That feeling you have now.
I think maybe it started in Montgomery because we were living there when the bus boycott started. And I saw things there that really disgusted me. I didn't like black people. In fact, I hated them. And I guess I don't think it would have bothered me to have seen them, you know, if they'd just shipped them all out. I don't think it would have bothered me. Well, I saw hundreds of Negro women walk from one side of Montgomery to the other. They were boycotting the buses, and they'd walk all the way to the white woman's house where they were working, and they'd work all day, and they'd walk back home. And then when the bus owners started getting desperate because more Negroes ride the buses than white people do in Montgomery, and I don't know this to be true, but I heard that they hired a bunch of real tough guys to make the Negroes ride the buses. And I saw them pick those women up and throw them on the bus. And a couple of times I was on the bus myself, and they'd wait till the bus stopped at the corner and they'd throw those women on the bus. And the women would just stand there, they wouldn't move. And then when the bus got to the next corner, they'd get off and they'd walk. They would not stay on that bus. And then my husband got in jail in Montgomery, and I went down to the jail one day to see him. And who'd they have out there but Reverend Martin Luther King down on the sidewalk beating him up, about 10 guys. And I felt this was wrong. I don't know why I felt it was wrong, but it just bothered me. He was just a nigger to me at that point. But it really bothered me to see a gang beating up on him. And one other thing that I know really touched me was the store where I always went to buy my groceries. It was a big supermarket. And they had a little tiny Negro woman. She didn't look like she weighed 100 pounds. And they had her putting up stock. And this great big white guy came in there and filled the shopping cart full of groceries. And then when he checked them out, she was standing there dusting the shelves. And he says, come here and take these groceries out to my car. And so she came up there and she started pushing the cart out the door, and he went out ahead of her. And even though she was taking his groceries, he was a great big able-bodied man, and he let the door slam on her. He wouldn't even hold the door open for her. So I went and I held the door open. And even when it was happening, I couldn't hardly believe it was happening. And then I said to him something about big, great big he-man. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was really nasty because I felt bad because he did that.
Coming back to that road, during the Depression, 40, you and your husband on that road, did cars pick you up?
Yes.
Yeah. They did.
Negroes picked us up, too.
Yeah.
And fed us. I remember one night we'd walked for a long way, and we were so tired and so hungry, and a wagon came along, and there was a Negro family going into town. And, of course, they're not allowed to stop and eat in restaurants, and so they'd cooked their food and brought with them. And they had the back end of the wagon filled with hay. And so we asked them if we could lay down and sleep in the wagon, and they said yes, and we were just dead tired, so we slept. And then we woke up, and it was morning, and she invited us to eat with them, and she had this box, and she had chicken and biscuits and sweet potatoes and everything in there. And it was just really wonderful.
Down in Texas, these Mexican people?
Oh, yes, Mexican people. I remember this one little boy in particular. He was really a beautiful child. And every day when we'd start to eat our lunch, we'd sit under the trees and eat. And these peppers grew wild. And I saw him sitting there, and every once in a while he'd reach over and pick a pepper and pop into his mouth and have it with his food, whatever he was eating. And so I thought they looked pretty good, you know. And so I reached over and picked one and popped it in my mouth. And, oh, it was just like liquid fire. And he was rolling in the grass laughing. He thought it was so funny, and he kept saying, you know, that white people couldn't eat peppers like they could. And he was tearing open grapefruits for me to suck the juice because my mouth was all cooked from the pepper. And then he used to run and ask me if he could help me. You know, sometimes when he wasn't working himself, he'd help me fill my boxes of grapefruits. Because he felt sorry for me because I got burned on the peppers. But I didn't feel any identification with them either. The men and the women, they were just spics, and they should be sent back to Mexico because they shouldn't be over here in the first place. That was the way I felt at that time. Now, since then, I found out that very state we took away from them in the first place. So I feel pretty bad about that. And I remember I was very irritated because there were very few gringos in this little town of Edinburgh, Texas. Hardly anybody spoke English because there were so few white people around, and when you try to talk to the Mexicans, they couldn't understand English. And we were insulted because they couldn't speak English. It never occurred to us that we should learn to speak Spanish. We always blamed them because they couldn't speak English. It's really hard to talk about a time like that, because it seems like a different person. When I remember those times,